Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, and welcome to A Real Point of View. In the second in our series of monster episodes, tonight we talk about monsters out of the shadows. So tonight with me is movie maven herself, Miss Karen D, and our other co-host, Mr. Larry Domkowski of Must See Movies on Facebook. How y'all doing, peoples?
Blah, blah. I'm doing fine.
Hey. I'm
doing
stoked,
fine?
As in Bram Stoker. I'm doing great.
Oh, and Karen says she's fang. She's
I'm
fang.
Fine,
doing
yes.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're having fun with our little monster mash, as it were. So we're going to have Larry kind of give us a little insight, since this is pretty much his brainchild, and not the brains of the child, just the brainchild.
Yeah, that's
so
a different movie.
That's a different horror sequence altogether. Okay, Larry, so kind of give us that overview on Monsters Out of the Shadows.
Well, last week we did Monsters of the Atomic Age, and we pretty much focused on Godzilla, and rightly so. This week we're talking about monsters out of the shadows, and these are the monsters that come out of our nightmares, out of our and mostly our European traditions. And so we're talking about vampires and werewolves and other monsters that came over the ocean with our ancestors, you know, Frankenstein, Phantom of the Opera, things like that. I'm going to start with the first vampire movie. I'm going to start with Nosferatu. Now, this is an important film. What? Who? Greg?
Yes.
Did you
I'm
want to say
sorry,
something?
Larry. I was just showing my horror of Nosferatu.
Oh.
I was being scared. It was
that's
just
okay.
Being scared.
Well, okay.
And
there you go.
I won't cry. I won't cry. I promise.
Nosferatu was a silent movie made in 1922 by a director, a German director, F.W. Murnau. He directed about 30 or so films, but this is the one that stands out, because before anybody talked about vampires, before anybody started making cartoons about vampires, before Bela Lugosi, about 10 years later, there was this film starring Max Schreck as the vampire, as Nosferatu. This film is a fantastic film in the use of dark and shadow. And in everything in this, every scene in this movie is filled with shadow. And it's from the shadows where all these bad things occur. Now, vampires, by tradition, the stories of vampires come out of the European plague. As a matter of fact, the weird mask-type face of Nosferatu with the longer nose and the ears are like a death mask. And the physicians who wore these death masks believed that if they walked around after twilight or before twilight, they would not get the plague. And so we get this mythology that vampires could only walk in the night. In this film, we see that happening. We see the coffins that are traveling with the vampire are filled with plague-laden dirt. And when he's on the ship, all of the people on the ship get the plague, and they die. So this is a very important aspect of how we see the origin of the vampire. In the later movies, that all goes away. But we still have this embodiment of what is the plague, and also the sexual overtones of this. In the book, Bram Stoker's book, Dracula, it was written with Victorian niceties. So all of the sexual overtones are underneath everything, but they're definitely there. In this movie, they pull it out greatly so, because it's not a stake through the heart that kills him. It's not some madman with a cross. It's a pure woman who seduces him, and then he stays out longer than he's allowed to until he gets into the full sun and he vanishes. This is those two things, the plague and then purity, the antithesis of the vampire. This is key to this film. It's a fantastic film. It's a silent film. Is it horrific in today's standards? Definitely not. But is it something that every person who loves horror films should see? Absolutely. And if it's something that if you love movies and if you like the history of film, this should be on your viewing list.
Now, one thing to say before we get away from that is I did see this original movie, and I'll be honest with you, and I grew up pretty much with Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing with regard to my vampire movies, which was really in the mid to late 60s and early 70s. And I'll be honest with you, Nosferatu still, because of the shadows, because of the way that it was filmed, if it's not horrific, it's very eerie. And eerie to the sense, and eerie to the point of being a bit scary. And it's something that, as you see this, it will stay with you. And it is definitely one of those films that could produce nightmares because of the eeriness.
One of the things that sticks in most people's minds is there's a scene on the ship where he rises, Count Orloff. That's the Nosferatu. Where Count Orloff rises from one of the caskets, and in that era, that scene is as memorable as the late great Roger Ebert said, it's as memorable as in 1972 watching Linda Blair's head turn around.
It's
that impactful, and again, it's one of those great moments throughout in movie history.
Hmm.
Have you ever seen this Sharon?
Not that one. Just different scenes from that movie, but I've never seen the whole movie from beginning to end.
Yeah. Let's move then to the 1931 Dracula starring our good friend Bela Lugosi. This was the I believe the first Dracula movie that had permission by the Bram Stoker estate to do the film. This one is so well known, it's almost humorous in watching it. And there's a big but here. When you watch this, when you watch this film, turn down all the lights. Turn off all the lights in the neighboring rooms. And just allow yourself to sink into it, and it will get you. Now, there's some things about this film that are very different. And wouldn't work with today's audience in the movie theater. But remember, this was done in 1931. The talkies were just starting, just starting out. They took a lot of risks that that they don't take today. If this movie was made today, like I said, it in the way it was made, it wouldn't work. They'd have to do a lot more special whiz bang stuff. But it's worth. It is definitely worth seeing. Bela Lugosi captures the more debonair version of Count Dracula, and he becomes an object of desire. And we're not quite sure whether or not his victims want to be victims themselves, or something inside of them want to be victims, or does he really have the power over them to just grab them and take them away?
Well, let me interject here a second, because I guess there are a couple of things that come to mind. One, that Bela Lugosi was not the first choice to play Dracula in the 1931 movie. It was actually not Lon Chaney. Lon Chaney Sr. But Lon Chaney died during pre-production for the Dracula movie, so obviously he wasn't able to be in it. And I think Bela Lugosi was an interesting choice. He played Dracula in a European stage version of the story. So he was very familiar with the story. But I think he really sort of helped kind of capture a little bit the sexiness, if I can use that word, of the vampire legend. Not because he was trying to be sexy, but just because he had this very patrician look, you know, and he had this weird Hungarian accent. She didn't quite, American audiences, especially 1931, really probably didn't really know what to do with. So
well,
he had that going for him.
That's so true.
And just
to add something to what you're saying, then I'll let you finish. Lon Chaney Sr. was so well known for him bringing out the humanity in the Beast, in whether it's Phantom of the Opera or it's The Hunchback of Notre Dame, and the list goes on and on. And he was able to find that bit of humanity in everything he did and made that the center part of his figure. And I'm sure that had a lot to do with how the film was created with Bela Lugosi.
The other thing that I think that's a very good point. And I guess the other thing I was thinking, too, was just sort of, you know, this story, another thing to consider is this theme of life and death and the quest for immortality, you know. And, I mean, you've got this, you've got on the one hand this monster sucking the life out of you, but is the monster really sucking the life out of you, or is somebody, as one person pointed out in some material I read, is this being really giving a gift, the gift of life? And at what price what price are you willing to pay for life? And, you know, maybe any price. It's worth any price, giving up blood, giving up, you know, your conventional, pathetic, pale life as you know it, to have this exciting unknown life, but you get to live forever. And to me, it's just really interesting the way that the Dracula movies, this one in particular, kind of present that theme, or present that proposition.
I've read that thing, and I agree with that I'm sorry, my brain just left me here. My apologies. Until you bring in Renfield. You know, who is Renfield? You know, Renfield is someone who's been bitten by Count Dracula. He is Dracula's slave, and he wants this. He needs this. His desire is to live forever as his reward, but he doesn't. You know, he falls prey to Dracula. Will do anything for Dracula himself to have to keep on going, to keep on surviving, even if it means killing everyone else. And there, once you put that into the mix, it changes what you say. It's really a curse and not something to want, to desire. You know, it's one of those things, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, it seems like
true.
Seems like the mystique of the vampire is truly the allure. What you think is the true promise of immortality, when the reality is that a vampire can die and be gone forever.
Right.
But until you know all the facts, the allure of the romanticism of it makes you think that, you know, this is going to be a wonderful situation. And Dracula's just looking at him, regardless of whether it's Dracula the 30s or further on down the road, it looks like there's an illustrious life. There's a certain type of vanity, a certain type of power that is associated with it, which gives you that quote-unquote allure of a better life, a better situation. And, you know, as these people find out that it's not so much that it gets to the point where now you're hunted by others because of the destruction of other lives. Not to dwell on it
too much. The other thing, too, is that you're also always hunting because of this lust for blood. You've got to find, which is, you know, part of poor Renfield's problem, because he's looking for blood anywhere he can get it, even if it's just a spider or a fly, which is kind of really, icky.
And it's very creepy, isn't it?
Disgusting.
Does
he kiss his mother with that mouth? I hope not.
I think not. This film, it's a real good film. I like the Nosferatu better, but this is a real good film. Again, like its predecessor, it's shot almost entirely in shadows. They have a very good use of negative space and make that the primary concern for the viewing audience. It's worthwhile.
I like to bring out, going a little further because we're only about 10 minutes now.
Yeah.
I want to take mention of A Man of 1,000 Faces. We've already mentioned Senior. Why don't we talk about A Man for 1,000 Faces and bring in another one of our monsters? Let's bring in the werewolf.
And this is actually The Man of 1,000 Faces' son.
Right.
This is Lon Chaney Jr., who, when his father dies, picks up picks up his mantle and his father's makeup kit, and he's pursued by Hollywood to do all of these things that his dad would have done. Lon Chaney did a fantastic job with The Wolfman. As a matter of fact, The Wolfman, 1941, it is starring Claude Rains, Lon Chaney, Bela Lugosi's in it, for crying out loud. And This one, the history of the werewolf comes right out of Eastern Europe and the plagues of rabies that just hit small towns everywhere, and people started behaving like wild dogs. That being said, there are a lot of really good werewolf movies, and The Wolfman 1941 starring Lon Chaney is one of the best ones.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, the other thing that's kind of interesting is that you've got Lon Chaney Jr., who I guess from what I can ascertain was a pretty big guy, you know, imposing presence. Claude Rains, who's supposed to be, I guess, his father in the movie.
Yes.
Really diminutive, a diminutive man, you know. And this whole film takes place in the rural English countryside, but Lon Chaney Jr. has an American accent. So that pretty much proves he was going to turn into a werewolf because, you know, he didn't fit in to begin with. And I think there were just some other in you know, weird sorts of setups throughout the movie, but it's like they were all related, but they didn't even begin to look related, even by movie standards.
Yeah,
I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Well, you're making a really good point. From what I understand, the werewolf starring Lon Chaney is a kind of a follow-up to a movie that was made a few years earlier called Werewolves of London. And that starred Henry Hull, another really good film. And I found that film to be a little bit not as refined as the werewolf starring Lon Chaney Jr., but definitely, again, it kind of begins the whole werewolf film story arc.
Right. Should we move to Frankenstein?
We should move to Frankenstein.
Let's do that.
Well, Frankenstein, I got to tell you, 1931 film. Starring Colin Clive as Dr. Henry Frankenstein, and Boris Karloff as the monster. Yes, the monster is not Frankenstein. Frankenstein is the doctor who creates him. And Henry Frankenstein is the true monster of the story because he is willing to put his morals and his ethics aside for the sake of science. And what happens? He creates something he can't control. And that is the essence of Mary Shelley's book, that science, that technology is driving mankind away from its moral center.
Run amok.
And this movie does a great job in bringing that bringing that story to the screen.
And kind of ironic, isn't it, how technology has been causing man to run amok, as we say it, over and over and over again in film, and we see that decade after decade after decade. But
we saw that in Godzilla last week.
We did.
Yeah.
And just seeing that, how even back then, we're foreshadowing things that are going to come to pass. And through the essence of horror films and, in this case, Frankenstein.
And it's really good to end with Frankenstein because it is a good connection to what we experienced last week in the conversation we had last week. These horror stories, all of them, especially this week's horror stories, like it's entitled, you know, Monsters from the Shadows. Well, if these are all about things in the shadows, things we can't see clearly, things that bother us, things that keep us awake at night, you know, whether if it's, oh, my job, oh, are my kids safe, are, you know, is my neighborhood safe, you know, those are the kernels that grow into horror stories. They come out of our own mind, our own id, our own imagination.
Right. But, you know, there's another interesting, or at least an interesting thing to me about Frankenstein, and I mean, I never hear this talked about, but I just think it's an interesting parallel about the need to create something, regardless of the ethics of it. But you have this man who wants to create life, and, you know, as far as I know, men can't get pregnant. So, you know, this is his baby, you know, and it's literally his baby.
He pulls
Frankenstein together literally from exhumed parts of dead bodies and just from the ground up creates what he hopes is a human being, but, you know, really isn't. It's grotesque. It's,
and the poor,
you know, dead people just want to sleep, and, you know, he's completely ruined all that.
It follows the biblical thing, you know, out of a lump of clay. So out of the dirt, out of the earth,
right,
comes man. And
right,
this and God creates man, which is the Dr. Colin Clive. I mean, the Dr. Colin Clive is Dr. Frankenstein, and Frankenstein, not God, exhumes body parts from the earth and creates the monster.
Right.
It's pretty incredible. Very quickly, when Mary Shelley wrote the book, she had a model for her for the monster. And her model was her husband, Sir Percy Bysshe Shelley, who hated technology so much and was known for going into drunken rages trying to beat up everybody in the tavern, everybody in the pub. And he'd go out just screaming and hollering and shouting. She used his disdain for technology, his disdain for modern life to give her that model for what is this monster, something created out of technology but disdains it.
Hmm.
Yeah, art imitating life, life imitating art.
Mm-hmm.
It always comes to pass. And,
so
and especially in this
case. This is again the films that we've talked about tonight, whether Nosferatu, Dracula, Wolfman, Frankenstein films, especially the original ones, these are all films worth seeing. They're all films worth embracing. You don't wait till Halloween to see them. You know, get yourself some popcorn and turn the lights down low and watch the film.
Or keep them on and watch the film.
No. You know. You know, well, notice we didn't talk about the slasher films. We'll do that another day sometime.
No, we won't.
Do that another time. But I'm going to let you know, to me, the scariest movies, although those are pretty eerie and scary, I'm into the vampire thing and the Christopher Lee movies, and I'm saying this because we lost Christopher Lee this year. Christopher Lee movies, the Dracula movies that he was in, along with Peter Cushing, those are some really good films as well. So
as far as I'm concerned, the best current vampire film is The Hunger.
Okay.
Yeah, that's crazy, crazy stuff there. Well, thanks a lot, you guys. Thanks, Larry. Thanks, Karen, for your opinions and information with regard to these films and these monsters the past 2 weeks. Ladies and gentlemen, as you're listening, as Larry said, get out to the movies, rent these, see them on the streaming videos about these horror movies. You'll find that they're really, really, really good. Well, thanks again for listening to us here on A Real Point of View. Check us out. Check out our archives here on A Real Point of View. Check us out on Facebook under A Real Point of View. And if you have any other comments, you can send them to me at RealMovieGuy on Twitter. Have a good night, everybody, and make sure you see a movie. Good night.